The last case of this morning is number 032752, Sims Madison against Inland Paperboard and Packaging Company. Mr. Gibbons.
Good afternoon, Ms. Recker, or good morning. We're right on the bubble there, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Philip Gibbons, and I appear on behalf of the appellant, Johnny Sims Madison. This appeal revolves around a settlement agreement that was negotiated approximately 2 years before the District Court issued its decision in this case. The District Court granted summary judgment in favor of Inland on the ground of accord and satisfaction, but then in direct contradiction of its accord and satisfaction finding, the Court ordered specific performance of portions of the settlement agreement, an issue that was not before the District Court because it was never litigated by the parties. I use the term direct contradiction because if Inland had proved its affirmative defense of accord and satisfaction, there would have been no reason for the District Court to enforce any part of the settlement agreement because the agreement would have already been fully performed. Under Indiana law, accord and satisfaction is a method of settling a dispute by substituting a new agreement in its place and fully performing it. The term accord refers to the new agreement, and the term satisfaction refers to the performance of the new agreement. So by asserting the affirmative defense of accord and satisfaction, Inland had the burden to demonstrate, one, the existence of a valid settlement agreement, and two, that the provisions of the settlement agreement had been fully performed by the parties. Inland could not sustain this burden because at the time the settlement agreement was negotiated and formed, the terms of the settlement agreement were in dispute, and because neither party ever performed any of the substantive provisions of the agreement. And for purposes of this appeal, Inland has asked the Court to expand Indiana law by holding that accord and satisfaction can exist without the performance element. And there's no precedent under Indiana law that supports this argument, and the Court should decline Inland's invitation to expand state law.
I gather the District Court thought this was all brought to its attention a little late. Isn't that his position?
Well, in the Court's decision, it granted the summary judgment specifically on the accord and satisfaction, and we filed a motion to amend the judgment, and in that decision, the Court believed that it was late.
Can you give me your version of why it wasn't?
Absolutely. As the moving party, Inland had the responsibility of identifying the basis for its motion. And as the non-moving party, we had the obligation to respond to those arguments. And so by arguing that accord and satisfaction existed, our obligation was to respond to the elements of that claim, whether or not a valid settlement agreement had existed, and whether or not that agreement had been performed. Under Indiana law, an accord is judged from the existence of accord, whether it exists. You look at it from the time the agreement was negotiated or when it was formed. So our argument before the District Court went to whether there was a valid settlement agreement at the time it was negotiated. And so the arguments that we raised there were, first, that the former attorney for Ms. Sims Madison didn't have the authority to go in and negotiate the release of her arbitration.
When did you make this argument to the District Court?
This is in our opposition brief. We responded to two arguments that the defense counsel raised in their opening brief. And we argued, one, that when the agreement was negotiated, the former counsel didn't have authority to enter into an agreement that included dismissing her arbitration rights, and also that the agreement was negotiated in violation of the National Labor Relations Act, because an employer can't bypass a union and direct deal with an employee to negotiate the dismissal of collective bargaining rights. Those two issues went toward...
You make this argument before the court ruled on the summary judgment motion?
Correct. In our opposition brief, those were the two arguments we advanced. Arguments relating to enforcement of a settlement agreement, which is very different from a court and a satisfaction argument. One is a defense, the other is an offense. If this were a case involving a motion to enforce the settlement agreement, issues that occurred subsequent to the formation of the contract, things like the passage of time, the fact that this case was arbitrated, the fact that the settlement agreement wasn't brought up before the arbitrator, and the fact that Inland reinstated Johnny Kim Madison, all things that happened after the formation, those are all things that are relevant to an enforcement action. But that was never before the court. And so, as the non-moving party, we met the arguments that were advanced by Inland, but somehow, again, their defense turned into an offense, and we ended up not with whether or not a court and satisfaction existed, but somehow an enforcement proceeding which we had no notice of and no opportunity to present relevant arguments. And one of the things... I think that's relevant here is the relief that Inland sought in its motion for summary judgment was dismissal of Ms. Sims-Madison's underlying discrimination claim. And that's consistent with an accord and satisfaction argument. Again, by arguing accord and satisfaction, what they were putting us on notice was that there's this valid settlement agreement, it's been performed, and therefore you can't resurrect your underlying claims of discrimination. Not that we believe there's a valid settlement agreement and we are filing a motion to enforce the provisions of that agreement. I don't know if there's any other way to explain that there's two very different things. The only place that you'll find Inland even mentioning enforcement of the agreement occurs at the very end of their reply brief. And that's too little too late. There's numerous cases out there that says that a company or a party cannot switch defenses or change a legal theory in the midst of summary judgment. The court, to the extent Inland pled according to satisfaction, which it did in its answer, its amended answer, and in its motion for summary judgment, it asked that the case be dismissed on that basis, should have required Inland to commit to that. And if Inland truly wanted specific performance of a settlement agreement, it could have simply asked. But to hold that we were on notice or somehow we are raising this too late, it would require me to be clairvoyant. And that's not a requirement, obviously, for an attorney as a non-moving party. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Fine, counsel. We'll hear now from Ms. Recker.
May it please the court, counsel. Inland Paperboard and Packaging, not surprisingly, believes that this case was correctly decided in the court below. We clearly have a different view of what was the issue that we put before the court on summary judgment. The facts were undisputed that during participation in the EEOC's voluntary mediation program, Sims Madison's attorney and Inland's counsel agreed to settlement of her claims against Inland. The terms were set out in a writing that Sims Madison's counsel prepared. For $30,000, she agreed to four things: to give up the arbitration of her termination, to drop her EEOC.
She wasn't even party to her arbitration, though, was she?
Not technically. The arbitration belongs to the union.
You have a question about unfair labor practice, I think, to settle an arbitration with an individual, not with a union.
And I wish her then-counsel had known that. And that was precisely the argument that Mr. Givens made in summary judgment, that this entire agreement became unenforceable because it included that provision, which he said was neither authorized nor legal. And the court agreed.
Well, does this lawyer have are you claiming he had apparent authority or actual authority to enter into the settlement agreement?
Since Madison, in her deposition, said that she had given him actual authority to settle her EEOC charges on terms he thought appropriate. The important thing about this, I think, is that Mr. Givens raised in the district court this problem. There is one of these four terms that is unauthorized and unlawful, and argued then that makes the whole agreement void. And that's just not the law in Indiana. The law in Indiana is there's a presumption as to enforcement of settlement agreements, and if the court is able to take out the unlawful provision and still maintain the basic purpose, avoid frustrating the basic purpose of the agreement, that's what the court should do.
Well,
take out the unlawful agreement and enforce the rest.
How do we know that she even agreed to it? When it was her lawyer who signed for it, there was no testimony with respect to his authority to enter into the agreement. I mean, that wasn't fully explored, I should say. I should rephrase that.
There really was, Your Honor, and it was what the court relied on. She testified in her deposition that she had explicitly authorized her then attorney to settle her EEOC charges on whatever terms he thought appropriate.
The EEOC, but not the...
That's correct.
Right.
And so what the judge did was throw out that provision of the agreement and say, I'm enforcing the rest of it. That's what she authorized. That's what she testified.
What's he enforcing?
He is enforcing this agreement. In exchange for $30,000...
What happened to the arbitration award?
Well, the arbitration award happens later. And Inland has no choice but to participate in the arbitration because the right to press this case to arbitration belongs to the union, and they exercised it. Since Madison would certainly say that they had not only the right but the duty to do that.
Now, I guess the union is suing you now on that basis, are they not?
Pardon me?
The union is now suing you because of this.
That's correct. That's correct. Attempting to make those arguments which the district court would not allow Sims Madison to make because she offered them for the first time in her Rule 59 e-motion. So the agreement that the court determined that the parties made, minus the unenforceable unlawful provision, was in exchange for $30,000, she gives up her EEOC charges, waives reinstatement, and gives Inland a release of claims. Mr. Givens says that that didn't happen way back then, and of course it didn't happen. Sims Madison immediately reneged, said, I'm not going through with this deal, and we, of course, did not hand her the $30,000. But the law in Indiana, I would guess the law everywhere, is that kind of repudiation of the agreement relieves the other party of the obligation to tender.
That doesn't make it an accord and satisfaction, does it?
Well, I think it does. It is an agreement to replace.
Well, it's not. There's no
dispute.
Satisfaction until you pay the money, though. Actually,
Judge, there's very interesting law in Indiana that says in a bilateral contract, the trade of promises is the accord and the satisfaction. But there is also this excuse defense. On Mr. Gibbons' argument about surprise is what he is focused on, and I would like to address that. That he would have to have been clairvoyant to know that it was the intention of Inland that the settlement agreement that it made be enforced. I believe that this court addressed exactly that issue in the case Pohl versus United Airlines, decided in 2000. In that case, the plaintiff, the issue before the court was the enforcement and enforceability of a settlement agreement. Hull had defended on the ground that he had never authorized the agreement, lost. The court ruled that it was enforcing the settlement agreement. And at that point, Mr. Pohl said, well, now wait, I have a new issue. That the settlement agreement can't be enforced because the written agreement didn't comport with the party's agreement. And this is what he said was, he had no reason at the time to argue that the agreement failed to reflect the terms agreed on. Judge Rovner says, that argument is nonsensical. The issue before the district court was whether it should enforce the June 2nd agreement. Pohl should have raised at that time any claims that he had that would affect the enforceability of that settlement agreement. It certainly should have been foreseeable to Pohl that he could lose on his argument regarding lack of authority, and that he should present any alternative arguments at that time. Clearly, in this case, it was foreseeable. It would be an overstatement for me to say inevitable, and I'm trying not to fall into that trap, but certainly foreseeable that when the judge said, under Indiana law, I can excise the one provision that is not lawful and force the other provisions, one of those provisions is calls for the dismissal of her EEOC charges, and I'm going to enforce that agreement as a whole, because that's the only way you can enforce agreements as a whole. When Mr. Gibbons suggests that he wants you to remand this case so that the judge can take evidence and figure out what the agreement really is, I don't believe there is any law that allows courts to do that or any reason that courts do that. There is an agreement in place. That's what the district court found, correctly found, and the court then enforced that agreement as it had been made by the parties, subject to taking out the unlawful provision. It, I think, should have come as no surprise at all to the plaintiff that the argument that Inland made throughout its briefing on this accord and satisfaction defense was that there were no facts in dispute about the existence or the terms of this agreement, which included the plaintiff's agreement to release all claims and dismiss these EEOC charges, that the court would enter an order saying, I am enforcing the agreement, as well as just that part of the agreement that requires dismissal of her claims, is precisely what should have been expected. It is exactly the right result in this case. For all of these reasons, we ask that the court affirm all three decisions of the lower court, the decision on granting summary judgment on accord and satisfaction, enforcing the settlement agreement that the parties had made, and denying the Rule 59e motion. Thank you.
You have 2 minutes, sir.
I believe Ms. Recker proved my point. In the Pohl case, enforcement of the agreement was obtained through a motion to enforce the settlement agreement. The court held an evidentiary hearing in that case. It's in the record to sort out the facts and legal arguments that involved enforcing that hearing. I've yet to find the case where a party has obtained specific enforcement of a settlement agreement by pleading a defense, especially the defense of accord and satisfaction. They're just two different things. And the only thing that we were on notice of with this repeated pleading of accord and satisfaction is that we entered into a settlement agreement, it's been fully performed, and therefore you can't resurrect this underlying dispute, which is the claims of discrimination. That's the only relief that Inland ever sought throughout the proceeding until it mentioned this in a heading in its reply brief, enforce this contract. And one of the problems, I believe, with the district court's decision is it's almost verbatim lifted from Inland's reply brief that has this contradictory language of accord and satisfaction exists, summary judgment's granted on that basis, yet we also want you to enforce this contract. My point is the district court does have the inherent power to enforce a settlement agreement. I don't dispute that. However, it cannot do it without at least providing notice to the parties and an opportunity to be heard on those issues. And that's what we were denied in this case, because Inland either pled the wrong defense, or I wouldn't accuse them of misleading us, but it was misleading, the defense that they pled and argued, and the defense that they were granted summary judgment on, which isn't supported. It's an affirmative defense, and they had the burden of proof, and they didn't meet it, yet they were still granted summary judgment on this basis. And so by asking to remand, Inland is not prejudiced in any way. We're just allowed the opportunity to go in and make the relevant arguments to a motion to enforce, as opposed to a defense of accord and satisfaction, rather than we are now defending on their offensive move rather than vice versa. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbons. Thank you, Ms. Record. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the morning, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.